You're listening to the Changing Minds podcast, interview series, episode 17, Lena Hart and the Alexander Technique.
Welcome to the Changing Minds podcast, the podcast about thinking for a change. This is the interview series. For another special interview, here is your host, Owen Fitzpatrick.
So I'm delighted to be joined by the wonderful Lena. Lena is an expert in the area of the Alexander Technique, and she helps people from all walks of life to be able to not just improve their posture, back pain, and all that sort of stuff, but also to be able to change how they think through being able to shift their bodies and feel more comfortable when they're in stressful situations and whenever they're public speaking and whatnot. With a background in acting and a background in filmmaking, Lena has got some incredibly great advice. So I wanted to get her on the show so that I could pick her brains about the incredible things that she does. Welcome, Lena. Great to have you on.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
So let me start off by asking you to describe what was the journey like, as in what brought you to be working with people in this context, helping them with the Alexander Technique?
Yeah, well, I certainly didn't plan on being an Alexander Technique teacher. I think since college, I had planned on being an actor. And before that, I was pre-med, and I thought I was going to be a doctor, a psychologist, actually. And so that's how I started in my undergrad. I'm a pretty practical person, actually. And so I was planning on being a doctor. My dad's a doctor. And my mom's a teacher, and turns out what I ended up doing was taking the two and meshing them together and making my own profession out of it. But I had been pre-med, and I had taken acting classes. I went to WashU in St. Louis, Washington University, and I was very shy, debilitatingly shy. But I sang, and I had sang in choir in my high school. And so I thought, if I'm going to meet people, I didn't know anybody at the school, I need to do something that would be social, maybe. So I sort of shoved myself into an acting one class and ended up totally falling in love with it, and really helped me break out of my shell a bit. And through that, some Alexander Technique teachers came and worked on us, and that first experience for me was a life-changing experience. And there's a lot of people who get into the Alexander Technique because they're in physical pain and they're looking for a way out, and they've tried physical therapy and they've tried cortisone shots and all these different modalities, and usually out of desperation they find us. And I got interested in it for a different reason. When this Alexander teacher kind of did this weird thing where he put his hand on my head and my neck, and I saw him doing this around the circle with other actors, and I'm a pretty cynical person at first, so I was like, what is this voodoo crap that what is happening in here right now? And everybody was like, oh yeah, feel great. And I was like, y'all are lying. This is a bunch of bullshit going on. And then he came to me, and he had this really, like, very gentle, but not, he wasn't like in my space, which I thought was weird and kind of interesting. And he said, okay, can you let your neck go? And at first I didn't even know what that meant. So I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. And he said, okay. And he tried to move my head. And of course I was stiff as a board and wasn't letting him move my head at all. And he said, well, I just mean, like, can I move your head for you? And you're just kind of allow me to. And I said, yeah, okay. And at first I couldn't do it because I'm also a control freak. And then I realized there was something I had to like release or let go of to let him move my head for me instead of me control it. And when I did that, all of a sudden, for me, this is my experience, I felt a little bit like I was a superhero. Like my senses expanded in like a really huge way from what they had been. So I felt like I had been kind of like, you know, one of those horses with the blinders on either side of them.
Yeah.
And then when I let go of my neck, all of a sudden it was like I could see things with surround sound.
Wow.
with my whole body. And I was like, what is happening right now? And then he was done. And it was like a little 2-minute thing. And I was like, what is that? What was that? I got to find out more about that. Yeah. And it started me off onto a path into going to private lessons myself with a bunch of different teachers there and then in New York. And then it became part of my grad school. And I was doing it always in conjunction with acting. And I found that for me, for acting, it made me my most alive self. It made my nervousness, although I wouldn't say it got rid of it, it gave me somewhere to focus it. And it helped me transform that excess energy, which was, so now it's so fulfilling for me to teach other people how to harness their energy like that.
Brilliant. And tell me this, because I have a bunch of questions that I want to ask about the Alexander technique. I've actually experienced it myself a few years ago.
Yeah.
A friend of mine who is sort of, he's in theater and he was working with me on a few courses, and he brought not only me, but also participants on courses that I've taught through one of the techniques about, you know, one of an Alexander technique sort of process. Mm-hmm. And I found it very useful. I found it fantastic, and it's great, particularly from a posture point of view. But yeah. Could you just give us a sense of the history? Was there a guy called or a girl called Alexander?
Yes.
And just where it came from and how it was discovered and when and all that sort of jazz.
Yeah, so he lived, Alexander, F.M. Alexander lived in the late 1800s. At least that's when he was really working. And he was an Aussie who then moved to England, and he was an actor. And he was an actor with major vocal problems. So he was doing shows, predominantly Shakespeare, and he consistently was losing his voice by the end of the show, or even before the end of the show happened. And he went to tons of doctors at the time. They gave him like lozenges, sprays, tried to give him different like vocal exercises to do. And he'd be fine during the day, but when he would do his show, nothing helped. So he came up with the brilliant idea, well, I must be doing something to make myself lose my voice. There must be something, I must be responsible somehow, because I don't lose it during the day when I'm talking to people normally. It's only happening in performance. So for 11 years, he, this is what they say, 11 years, he stared at himself in a mirror and tried to pretend like he was performing to see what was he doing that was causing this. And what he started to notice was he would get into this kind of heroic, I'm going to speak Shakespeare now stance. And what that was he would lean back on his heels and kind of curl his toes, which he thought was good. He thought he was gripping the ground, right? He thought that's what being grounded was. And he'd kind of tip his chin back to look what people of the day thought was good posture, right? So he would kind of puff out his chest, tip his chin back, and he was like, yeah, that's what I do. That's what I do every single time. And he noticed that as he did that, his vocal cords would constrict. And when he tried to not do it, he had a really hard time with it because it had become a very deeply ingrained habit. And so he created this process, these principles of a technique to apply to himself, really, so that he could act without losing his voice. And then he ended up helping a ton of people, very famous people. He notably he saved George Bernard Shaw's life, and the man ended up living so much longer because of Alexander.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a credit to him then. George Bernard Shaw, good old J.B. Shaw. great. So now, obviously, it's evolved over the years and stuff like that. So how would you define it? How do you explain it to people in a nutshell when, like, if I say to you, like, what do you do? And then you say, I do the Alexander technique. And I'm like, what's that? What's the response that you give that best explains it from your perspective?
Well, it usually depends on who I'm talking to. I usually appeal to what their interest is, because it really is very applicable to lots of different kinds of people. But what I say is, I teach you how to use your body so that it is the most efficient way that it can be used. So I'm teaching you ergonomics for your body. And what that helps is, in public speaking, for example, it helps you be your most likable version. It helps you have the most charisma that you can have. You feel the best. I'm really getting your body out of the way of your own joy and spontaneity so that you can live life to its fullest. If I'm talking to someone who's in tremendous back pain, then the answer is even simpler. It's to have your body balance and be used the way that it's meant to be used so that you can not have pain anymore.
And what does a session then look like if you're going in to work with someone? And I know obviously it'll again depend on why they're there, but let's say, for example, work with someone who wants to be more comfortable and confident in social situations, or more comfortable and confident when they're speaking in public. Mm-hmm. What does a session look like? What kinds of things are you doing with them during that session to help them to be able to feel better?
Yeah. Well, usually in the first half of the session, and maybe for the first few lessons, what we're learning is for them to be in control of their body. And what that means to me is they become aware of what are their physical and mental habits that they have. For example, a lot of people, when they start speaking, without even realizing it, unconsciously, they lean back on their heels, just like Alexander did. And the second they do that, their breathing literally stops, completely stops. And your brain then goes into panic mode. It goes into a fight or flight response. And there's not a whole lot you can do about it while you're leaning back on your heels because your brain is going to try to flood you with adrenaline and cortisol to get you boosted and running away from what you're telling it is a scary situation. So I point that out, right? I point out what their physical habits are so that they can start to become aware of them. And then I teach them how to not do that habit. And then I give them a tool of what to do instead. So I say, for example, instead of leaning back on your heels, you're going to slightly, very so slightly, and I show them what that is in person, you're going to actually more lean forward into the balls of your feet. It's not that you're bringing your heels up off the ground. You're just weighting yourself slightly forward in a more ready position, actually. And then same thing if most people have a lot of neck tension, especially when they're about to speak publicly. And so what we'll practice throughout the lesson is they'll usually bring in some material that they're interested in working on. It might be even like if they have a board meeting or something like that, and they're going to be talking to people who intimidate them, they will play pretend basically. And we'll do it, and I'll stop them throughout the process to point out the habits that are engaging. They will stop that habit. And then we'll kind of go on a practice session of being able to speak without their old habits and choosing this new way of focusing.
Cool. And so do you address the psychology aspects at all, or do you address the psychology aspects through the physical all the time?
I think I do both, yeah.
So when you address the psychological aspects, so for example, with the physical aspects, what you're doing is you're getting them to be aware of what they do when they're in the crisis mode. And then you're getting them to be aware of what they need to do instead. And you're working with them and making sure that they do that so that they can do it themselves.
Right. But
then when they're in the scenarios, then and you practice and rehearse it so that they get into the habit of doing it.
Right. So
what about the perspective? You know, like, for example, sometimes what triggers the physical manifestation of behavior is the thought. And sometimes the physical manifestation of the behavior is what triggers the thought. So sometimes the thought triggers it, and sometimes it triggers the thought. So you address the thought at all? And if so, how do you do that? Or what kinds of ways do you describe to them about how to be thinking or whatnot?
Yeah. So what I sort of have found for myself, being a person who's incredibly introverted, and also for my students, is that you can be, let's say, what you really desire is for these people to like you. Right? That when you're getting up there, you really want them to like you. But if you focus on that, it's going to end up being poop pretty much always. So you have to change your focus. And I find that if you get your body ready and sort of like primed, so to speak, balanced, then your brain does a little switch for you. And I don't know the science behind that, but it seems to work. And so I'll say, it's good for us to know why you're nervous. It's good for us to know why you might have these habits. But in the end, it doesn't really matter. The why doesn't so much matter. It's happening. And so we're just going to deal with what is happening. And so I know for me, I was intensely curious of why I was holding my shoulders and holding my neck. But in the end, it didn't really matter. I had to deal with it. You know what I mean? And
in many ways, that's what happens. I mean, we develop physical patterns all over the shop. Like, we develop them from the time we're kids.
Yeah.
It could be because we're used to carrying suitcases. It could be because we're used to being on the internet, because we have a certain way of sitting when we're watching TV on the couch.
Absolutely.
You know, eating a certain way. So there's a whole bunch of, as you said, reasons why we have the postures. But at the end of the day, we either do or we don't have them. I think just on the psychological thing in terms of that, I think in many ways, this whole priming mentality of using the physical to affect the psychological, the science behind it, there was a lady called Amy Cuddy, you might have heard. She talked about these things called power poses.
Yes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And now that research was sort of challenged quite a lot, but the idea of it is that the posture you use releases certain chemicals in your brain. And therefore, if you get into the right physical state with the right physiology and the right physicality, that in turn will have a positive impact upon the chemicals that are released. And I think despite the fact that some of her research was debunked, I think it's common sense that if you walk in a certain way, it's going to have repercussions on how you feel. If you stand more powerful, you're going to feel more powerful. If you walk with more confidence, you're going to feel more confident. And so I think with the Alexander technique, even though you might not be, you know, trying to make them necessarily shift their body to be more confident, you're trying to shift their body so that they have the right kind of balance that optimizes, as you said, how they are and how they, you know, are able to, how they stand and how they move, so that it's using the body the way it's supposed to be used. But I think that the byproduct is that those kind of stances tend to extenuate the emotional reaction. Would that make sense?
Absolutely. And I think it honestly, not to say anything about that wonderful researcher who came up with the power poses, yeah, but I think I would be in disagreement with the power poses also. And the reason I would be and have been is because I think their attempt was to make you feel more powerful, right? Mm-hmm. But in terms of public speaking, your job is not to be more powerful. That's not what makes you likable, in my opinion. I agree more with you. I loved listening to your podcast about likability. What often makes you incredibly likable is your true authenticity and your acceptance of others, your willingness to listen and engage with others, your openness and, dare I say, vulnerability. And I don't mean weakness when I say that word, I mean openness. And a power pose is not open. A power pose is defensive. And that's a completely different situation. And what it ends up doing is putting a person back on their heels. And what you see with actors, when actors are working really well and they're affecting an audience really well, which is the same thing for public speakers, what is happening is everybody starts to breathe together, right? They become part of a community of sorts. Almost, it's something that happens, I think, in religious situations and like church and synagogues and mosques all over the world, right? Is that what ends up happening is people become synced up. And when you become synced up like that, which happens when you allow your breath to free and someone is watching you and you're engaging. So what they start to do is they start to mirror you and they start to copy you. And then you are now in cahoots with each other and you become incredibly watchable and incredibly likable. And it almost doesn't even matter what you're saying.
Absolutely.
You know? And so I think that for me, the power pose, it creates too much defense. Right, it makes a person feel like they have to be better than, as opposed to the same as.
I think, yeah, no, I mean, I would agree with a lot of what you said. I think the key is that certain situations call for different states. So obviously, certain times you want to be able to come across with confidence. I mean, one of the things about, for example, women in the workforce, you know, overall, is that they don't tend to be perceived as confident as men.
Mm-hmm.
So a woman who is significantly more skilled, more intelligent, more competent than, you know, her male colleagues might not get recognized because she's not perceived as being confident, whereas the guy tends to be more likely to be confident even without competence. So for her, right, she might need to, like you, like I, like as actors, you need to be able to position or present yourself. But I think what you do is you get people to be able to stand or move in the optimal position for their bodies so that they can fully express themselves. There's no, as we call, like in terms of one of the aspects of reading body language that I've done work on is in terms of how do you look at the leakage that comes from another person. So when you're there's that they're releasing and showing you. We all do it. We all give indications as to what's really going on. In poker, they're called tells. And so my understanding of Alexander technique would be that when you're balancing your body and you're actively creating new, more useful habits of posture and whatnot, that reduces the amount of leakage and the amount of tells that you would communicate to other people about, you know, any insecurities that lie underneath. Would that be accurate? Or
yeah, that's a great way to put it. And I think that one of the things that I do teach is confidence, which is different than arrogance, right? They're two totally different things. And so you being at ease with yourself is confidence. That's what it is, right? You kind of fully accepting yourself, liking yourself, all of those things, which sound a bit heady maybe and a little a little self-helpy. I think that there is a physical way to do that, actually. And there's a physical way in, because I think sometimes it can be quite hard to change your mind about stuff. But I think a sneaky way in often is to go from the outside in, to go from the physical first. And you can kind of trick your brain that way.
For sure. And so what sort of techniques or pieces of advice could you give to people in this podcast, in this interview? What pieces of advice would you give them in terms of things they can do to start the process of how allowing Alexander technique to, or elements of the Alexander technique to help them improve their life?
Yeah. Well, I think first things first is to start to notice where you hold your tension. And most people are aware of the big things. Usually people are aware of back tension and neck tension, and they're not really aware of what am I doing with my feet, let's say. So when you're talking, even if you're sitting at a meeting and talking, check out, are your feet even on the ground? Are your legs crossed and tight and you're kind of pulling them up into your body? Just starting to notice it. And often, you know, there's Alexander technique teachers all over the world, really wonderful ones. And I wanted to just make an offer to help anybody who's listening. If they can't find one, I'll find one for them. It's one that's convenient and close to them. Yeah, because sometimes it can be hard to be aware of what you yourself doing when you've been doing it for many, many, many years.
And so I suppose, and thank you for that, Lena, that'd be great. But in terms of then noticing or being aware of where you store your tension, and then is it about adjusting that? Is there any sort of rules of thumb where people should know that the best, I think you were saying sometimes people lean back on their heels. And you want to try your center of gravity to be on the balls of your feet? Is that it? Or what general rules of thumb are there for people who want to be able to become more balanced? Or
well, some little tips that I find for speaking, if you're standing, is to have one foot slightly in front of the other. So not to be on a flat plane per se, right? To not have your feet in parallel, but have them slightly turned out. That tends to make your legs, your femur bones inside your hip joints be much more at ease. And when that is much more at ease, your diaphragm can drop down much lower and you can breathe better. And right. So that's a quick tip. Also, noticing, is your chin up in the air, right? Are you kind of pulling your chin up? And if you are, can you let it drop down? And so something that I find helpful is looking in a mirror to see what your habits are so you can really see it, because you might be shocked at what you think you look like versus what you actually look like.
Yeah.
Right? And most people have no idea they're pulling their head back and down, actually. And I would say 99% of the people I work with do.
And so tell me, because actually the first one is something that I would be doing when I'm to teach a public speaking. It's always like one foot in front of the other, feet facing out. So that stuff. Now, obviously, I have a totally different explanation or reason, but it's great that you have, like, you come from a physical point of view. I come from a mental point of view with the same advice. But the chin thing, because I've noticed that from time to time, but it's not something that. So what's the problem with having your chin facing sort of upward versus down?
Yeah, the problem is it shortens your spine. And when you do that, so your brain is up here on top of your head, and then you have your neck, and all of your nerves have to run through your neck to the rest of your body. If you shorten that area and cause what I call traffic in the neck, then your brain cannot communicate well to the rest of your body because there's a whole bunch of traffic there. And so what you want is you want the most length out of your spine and out of your neck so that none of the nerves are being bothered, basically, right, and infringed upon. And so they can communicate. And what ends up happening is your blood flow increases. You feel a little bit calmer, I would say. And what ends up happening is your brain isn't triggered into fight or flight mode. Putting your chin up in the air is an immediate defensive stance, even though it would actually in reality get you probably hurt because the neck is such a sensitive area. But what we do, we have not quite evolved smartly enough to not do that when we get scared. And most people, when they get scared, they hike their chin up into the sky, and it puts them into like either a fight response, a flight response, or a freeze response. And your brain actually stops working on occasions, people will faint from it, right? Like they need a full reboot. And it also triggers is a full body response. So that will trigger your legs tightening on you. A lot of people will then lock their knees. A lot of people will then put their hips in front of them. And this is that freeze response that I'm talking about. And what will ensue is, because that stops their breathing mechanism, panic. Panic is what then is the next step to that. Okay. And so all of that starts initiating from your head coming back.
Very interesting. Very interesting. And so just a couple more, Lena, if you don't mind. So first of all, flying, sleeping on flights. one of the things that, because I need to, I fly like 80 flights, 90 flights a year. So I'm like constantly in the air, and I still haven't mastered the art of sleeping. The only time I can sleep is when I really shouldn't be sleeping because I got work to do. Yeah. But I, you know, those pillow, the neck pillows, right? So I've used them, but that just pushes my neck forward. And then I see other people sort of stick them forward, which pushes the neck, sort of locks the neck against the thing. Like, have you any tips on what you would suggest someone does to minimize the, you know, horrendous damage that, you know, besides being rich enough to afford business class every trip.
Right. Well, there's a couple of things. So people think a lot about like the neck area with those neck pillows, and that's very important. And the other thing that most people don't think about is the shape of the airline seat. And this is the same thing for car seats. They are not ergonomically designed. So the seat itself slopes back, right? The butt part slopes back. And that makes an automatic C curve of your spine, which is not natural to your body. And it triggers a similar kind of response. It's why most people are kind of squirmy on a flight, because it's not comfortable. Your body didn't like it. And so what I would suggest is, they sell these things called wedges. And what you want is, you want your hips to be higher than your knees. You want your legs to be able to fall out. And when that's happening, which happens like when you sleep on a bed, for example, usually, right, you start to relax. And then I would also suggest that those neck pillows can be great if they're fully supportive. And what I mean by that is, they're now selling these things that like wrap all the way around your neck so that your head doesn't fall completely, like your chin doesn't drop all the way to your chest, right? And you can also tilt your head back a little bit or to the side a little bit. But the key is that if you're going to sleep somewhere, you want full support where you're not having to hold it or crane it in some weird position. So I would recommend something like any kind of neck pillow like that, where you can actually position it so that it is supporting you instead of dropping your head to one angle. That's a harsh angle. The least amount of angle possible is your friend.
And where do you get those wedges things? You stick them behind your lower back, is it?
No, you put them on the base of the seat. So you're actually going to sit on top of it.
Oh, interesting.
So with the higher, well, I've seen them on Amazon. And depending,
they're called wedges, are they?
Yeah, and there's a ton of different. They're usually made of foam. Yeah, and you can use them for your cars. You can use them for airlines. It's great for any seat that's sloped back like that.
Okay, cool. And I've just one other thing, and this is just a selfish personal one, but yeah, I wanted to ask it. So years ago, I cracked two discs in the back of my neck, C5, C6, and C7. And so since then, I've had to get, you know, I get regular physical therapy every like 6 weeks or so. I exercise regularly, largely as a result of that, you know, to keep the base strong. Is there anything in particular that you'd recommend that I just watch out for or keep an eye on or any of that sort of jazz?
Yeah. So I would recommend that you're really watching how you balance your head and also where your hips are. So do you have any neck pain?
No, like sometimes, I mean, whenever I get my physical therapy done, it's always stiffer there than the rest of my body. Like my lower back's always generally ground, but it's like the upper back and neck and, you know, shoulders that are usually
between your shoulder blades.
Yeah, it's usually quite tight. And I mean, it's like the masseuses or the physical therapists are always going, you know, your back is like a block of like cement. And I'm like, oh, thanks for the compliment. But, you know, it's just, it's apparently like lots of things, but that doesn't bother me. It's, and because I get it regularly looked after, there's no, you know, there's not much pain that often, but it's just to make sure that I'm still looking after, because, you know, once they're cracked, it's just about taking care of it. But I just want to know from your point of view, anything. So you're saying hips and.
Yeah. So if you were to stand, what I would say is, what you want to take a good look and see, do your hips come in front of the rest of your torso, even just slightly, right? And 99% of people in the first world countries, they do, because of how we walk on cement and flat surfaces so much and sitting in chairs a ton and all of that. And so what I would recommend is we teach something called monkey position, where you're standing a bit in what looks like a teeny tiny monkey. And eventually you can do it in such a small way that nobody even knows you're doing it. It just looks like you're standing up straight. But you're going to let your hips kind of float out behind you. That's what it will feel like. They'll actually be right underneath your shoulders. But I call it like kind of imagining that there's like a huge brontosaurus tail growing out of your butt. and it's waggling out behind you to like the wall behind you. And you're able to move it. And your spine, the center of you, is sort of, the image I like is of like a cobra coming out of a basket. Like your spine should be movable like that, right? It should be that flexible. And so for you, what I would say in particular is between behind your chest and in front of your shoulder blades, you want that place to be incredibly malleable. You want your hips to feel like they're kind of floating out behind you. And your head, neck, you're going to let your head kind of tip forward, ooh, just a little bit, so that your head's a little bit in feeling like it's a bobblehead. You don't have to shake your head like that, but it has that kind of potential of movement. It's that loose on top of your neck. And this is how you're optimally designed. And when you do that, you might notice that all of that stiffness that you're talking about just melts away. The reason, without seeing you, the reason I'm guessing you have that stiffness where you have it is because your hips are resting more forward in front of your shoulder joints. And because of that, somebody has to hold up the weight of your neck, the weight of your head, right? And everybody's head is between 11 and 13 pounds, which is some serious weight. And you seem very smart, so probably 13 pounds, right?
I have a big head, but I'm not sure that I'm not a big brain. I think a lot of it's the wrong kind of matter, you know? It's no matter as opposed to gray or white.
So with that kind of weight, if your spine is not supporting your head the way it's made to, because things are out of whack, out of balance, your hips aren't where they're supposed to be, right? And your weight maybe sometimes is back on your heels because of that, then your shoulders have to hold up the weight of your head and they're not made to do it. And so they get stiff.
Okay.
But the second they don't have to hold it up anymore, in 2 seconds, they can become loose. And I feel like a lot of people, when they feel like they have stiffness, they think, oh, it's old age or it's just how I am. But it's 99% of the time, that's not true at all. I work with a lot of like 70, 80, 90 year olds who you would be shocked at how light and bouncy they are. Right. You know, it's just the second you get yourself organized, you know how to organize your body knows how to work really well. Even with you cracking your, and I've never heard that word cracking the...
Might be an Irish way of saying it.
It might be it, yeah.
Yeah, herniated discs. So.
Because if it is herniated, it can fix itself.
Oh, right, okay.
So the second your body gets reorganized, I've worked with a lot of people who no longer have herniated discs.
Okay.
And it just goes back because it's kind of like a pimple coming out, you know? And the second there's space where they're supposed to be, it just goes right back in.
All right. Okay, cool. I'm not sure if it's cracked or herniated. I'll figure it out. No, I don't pay nearly as much attention to my problems as I should do. But listen, that's really useful. So thanks very, very much, Lena. Just a few questions, just a quick fire round. Your favorite movie?
Oh boy, this is always so hard for me, but I think it's probably American President.
Oh, interesting. Good. That's a different one. Your favorite TV series?
I love The Office.
Oh, yeah. Which one, the UK or the American?
I know. I love the American one, even though I originally loved the UK one, but I also love the American one.
For sure. Favorite author?
I'm really into fantasy novels. And lately, the Robert Jordan series, the Wheel of Time series, has become my favorite.
Very cool. Very cool. Favorite musician?
I have eclectic tastes. I would say Ella Fitzgerald is pretty top up there. For me.
Cool. That's a pretty cool musician to be into. That's very good. Favorite artist?
A visual artist?
Yeah.
I would say Matisse.
Okay. Favorite philosopher? You got one?
Maybe Eric Fromm.
Okay, cool. If you could have any superpower, what would you have?
Two. Can I choose two?
You can choose two, of course.
Okay. I would know the future consistently and I'd be able to fly. I'm really into flying. That'd be fun.
The flying makes sense, but if you know the future completely, then you don't get surprised by anything and you don't have the joy of...
That's true. That's true. And I agree with that. I agree with that. But sometimes I feel like I do know, but it's not always.
Okay. All right. Right. Next, if you could travel anywhere, past, present, or future, where would you go?
I really like the time I'm living in right now. But I would say that I think it would be fun, just like a really fun curiosity to watch Elizabethan actors and writers and be in that time and just as an observer.
Cool. Yeah. Alternative profession. If you weren't doing what you're doing, what would you be doing?
I'd probably be a doctor.
Oh, okay, cool. Again, helping people. Mm-hmm. And if you weren't living where you're living, where would you be living?
Maybe Italy.
What part of Italy?
I feel like Florence.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah.
And lastly, if you were to give one message to the world on a billboard to help people, what would the message be, do you think?
Maybe it'll all be okay in the end.
No, oh, I was expecting some stand up straight. But, that's good. It'll all be okay in the end. I like that. Sweet. So can you tell the listeners where they can find out more information about you and Alexander Technique and the kind of work that you do?
Yeah, you can go to my website, alexandertechniquesfbayarea.com. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area. So that's a great place to find out more about me. Yeah, and it's all smushed together.
Super. And you have some really cool blog posts I saw on there as well. So lots of good advice about lifting children and all sorts of stuff, because I have a lot of friends that are, parents that are struggling with back pain as a result. So loads of great advice is on Lena's website. Highly recommend you check them out. And I will put it on the show notes as well.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Owen. I really love talking with you.
Absolutely. Me too. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Changing Minds podcast. For show notes, please visit changingmindspodcast.com. Oh, and can you rate and review this episode and subscribe to this podcast? You'd be amazing. Catch you later.